ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley. This week, we're bringing you interviews on the biggest stories in the news from across the ABC. I'll be back on January the 14th with all new episodes of ABC News Daily.
Hello, I'm Sydney Peed, coming to you from Gadigal Land, Sydney, with the news on ABC News Daily. After a dramatic military operation capping off months of escalating tensions, the former president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, is now in a New York prison. Maduro and his wife were captured by US special forces after the Trump administration launched airstrikes on the Venezuelan capital Caracas over the weekend. Photographed in handcuffs and dressed in a black tracksuit, the deposed president will now face court on narco-terrorism and conspiracy charges. But after the arrests, US President Donald Trump made it clear what else the US operation was about, saying the US would reclaim American oil interests.
We're going to have our very large United States oil companies, the biggest anywhere in the world, go in, spend billions of dollars, fix the badly broken infrastructure, the oil infrastructure, and start making money for the country.
With Maduro gone, the Venezuelan military has endorsed the interim presidency of his former vice president, Delcy Rodriguez. But Donald Trump has warned she could suffer a fate worse than Maduro if she doesn't comply with American demands, and later reiterated who was running Venezuela.
You said the U.S. would run Venezuela.
We're dealing with the people. We're dealing with the people that just got sworn in. And don't ask me who's in charge, because I'll give you an answer and it'll be very controversial.
What does that mean?
We're in charge.
Have you spoken with her?
We're in charge.
Donald Trump also signaled other Latin American nations could be next. Today, Professor Ben Saul, Chalice Chair of International Law at the University of Sydney, on what this brazen US military action means for international law. But first, Venezuelan journalist and political scientist Tony Frangie-Mawad, who was near Caracas when the strikes began, speaks with ABC News Channel's Melissa McKay on what comes next for Venezuelans.
Did you hear the explosions in Caracas on Friday night? Just take me through what you were thinking at the time.
Sure. Actually, I was in a beach town near Caracas when it happened, so I didn't hear them, but I woke up at 2:30 in the morning when my brother-in-law came and he told me that he had received messages that they were bombing Caracas. So we checked our phones, but there was no signal. So when the signal finally came back, I had hundreds of messages from friends, from family, videos showing helicopters flying over Caracas, explosions over military bases in the city. I called my mom in the city, and she told me that she heard the explosion and that everybody was listening to helicopters flying. They kept flying for a few hours after the explosions happened. So there was a lot of uncertainty, and at that moment, we decided to head to the market in the area to get some food in case there were going to be, you know, shortages or something like that. So I go down, and people were just filling bottles with water and lining up, doing queues for food. And that's when, a few hours after, we found out that the U.S. had extracted Maduro, because Trump announced it on Truth Social. So when the news came out, there was a loud cheering in the area, and people reported to me loud cheering in other areas. But after that, I feel that a major sense of uncertainty kicked over once we found out that, you know, they took Maduro, but nothing much else had changed in the ground, and we didn't know where the country was headed to. So that was more or less the feeling in the first hours.
Yeah, talk me through a little bit more about the reaction from Venezuelans. As we've been hearing over the last couple of days, there's a lot of mixed emotions. You know, people seem to be, you know, on one hand, pleased that Maduro is no longer in power, but there's a lot of concern around the way in which the United States has gone about this.
Yeah, so I'd say that at first, like, people, there was a lot of excitement with Maduro being taken out because he was deeply unpopular. But the fact that the other figures from the regime, all the military apparatus, etc., remain the same, has led to people to fear that we're actually just going to see an entrenchment of the authoritarian system in Venezuela. On the other hand, Trump's remarks on taking the oil and just running Venezuela like, you know, a serf colony made many Venezuelans uncomfortable, despite the positive reaction of, you know, Maduro being extracted out. Outside, we saw the diaspora celebrating in cities like Bogota, like Buenos Aires, Santiago de Chile, New York. But in Caracas, there wasn't a lot of celebration because there's a lot of fear and a lot of fear of repression from the government itself. So what we saw in Caracas and other cities was Venezuelans running to do queues at gas stations, at supermarkets, at pharmacies, you know, to get food and water and basic supplies in case things could go worse or there could be a collapse of the supply chain or something like that. But till now, things have more or less calmed down and Venezuelans are more or less going back to normal. There were more cars today in the city, more activity. Yesterday, it kind of felt like a ghost town. And many people are going back to work tomorrow and to classes tomorrow.
Okay. And can you talk to me about the current status of the opposition in Venezuela, who many people say, you know, rightfully won the last elections? What's the situation with the opposition as it stands?
So there's overwhelming evidence that the opposition did win on July 28th of 2024. Nevertheless, at this point, the vast majority of the opposition leadership is either exiled, in prison, or hiding. We saw that Maria Corina Machado, the opposition leader, recently left the country after 16 months in hiding to go to Oslo, where she received the Nobel Peace Prize. Edmundo González, who is considered the rightful winner of the elections, is in Madrid in exile, and the other leaders, as I said, are either in other countries or in jail in Venezuela. So the opposition doesn't have a lot of leverage or influence within the bureaucracy of the government and within the armed forces. So yesterday, Trump kind of lambasted Machado, saying she doesn't have respect from within the country, probably referring to the structures that control the country and the institutions. So at this point, the opposition is calling for a swift transition and for González to actually take power. But based on what the U.S. is saying and Marco Rubio and Trump are saying, people here are expecting that they're going to, you know, move with Delcy Rodriguez, the current vice president, to stabilize the country and to do a series of reforms, both economically and politically, that maybe in the short to medium term could lead to some sort of elections or transition in which the opposition can come back to the country and participate freely in the political system. But for now, the opposition is being sidelined by both the government and the U.S.
That was Tony Frangimawad, a Venezuelan journalist and political scientist, speaking with Melissa McKay. Professor Ben Saul is Chalice Chair of International Law at the University of Sydney. He spoke with Radio National breakfast host Barbara Miller.
First of all, let's just go to that Marco Rubio comment that this was a law enforcement operation. What do you make of that?
That's, of course, complete nonsense because this was a high-intensity military operation involving the bombing of multiple military bases and other targets in Venezuela. And over 80 people were killed, including civilians. So this is squarely a prohibited use of force under the United Nations Charter and also such a serious use of force that we call it an armed attack, which gives Venezuela actually the right of self-defense against the United States. And even what we call the international crime of aggression. That is where leaders like President Trump and the Secretary of War and the military commanders order and carry out an invasion of another country. And that's a crime under international law.
If it's so clear cut to you, what then do you make of the reaction of many foreign leaders who have welcomed the removal of a man they regarded as illegitimate? And said they're monitoring the situation.
Well, certainly there's a lot of politics and not enough law in all of this. But I can say many countries in the global south, including in Latin America, have strongly condemned this attack. And indeed, most Western countries have not been in favor of this. I mean, their reaction has been pretty timid because a lot of people don't want to upset Donald Trump. And there's this fear of reprisals from the United States. And it's one thing to acknowledge that President Maduro was an illegitimate government who fixed an election and who carried out a serious campaign of human rights violations against the Venezuelan people and to say it's not a bad thing that he's gone, but that's not to say that the way he was removed was legal. And in fact, under international law, abduction of a leader on foreign territory is clearly prohibited, and heads of government have immunity from foreign prosecution in other countries' courts. So at so many levels, what the US has done here is a very clear violation of international law.
Can the UN do anything, though, given the US is a permanent member on the Security Council?
Well, that's, of course, the problem, the long-standing problem for the last 80 years, that permanent members of the Security Council get a veto power and can block any action against themselves or their friends. And that's a serious structural weakness in the United Nations system. The Security Council is not the only bit of the UN. And, of course, the General Assembly has a power to make recommendations and to condemn action like this. And every country gets an equal vote in the General Assembly. And when the United States has previously attacked Latin American countries, the United Nations General Assembly has condemned these kinds of attacks.
Well, yes, the removal essentially of Noriega, is there a direct comparison here, or what are the differences in your view?
Well, certainly there are similarities in abducting a foreign leader, a relatively limited military intervention for, you know, what the Americans would call a law enforcement purpose. But of course, in international law, you can't send your police into another country without the permission of the foreign country's government. One important difference here is that it's not just about drugs. I mean, in Venezuela, the U.S. has made it very clear it wants to get its hands on and control Venezuela's oil and natural resources. So that is a significant difference. This is a return, really, to the old colonial gunboat diplomacy, where if you wanted someone else's natural wealth, you just went in and took it using military force. And that's not a world any of us want to live in.
What about questions around whether this sets some kind of precedent? For example, were Russia to simply go in and remove Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine? Are those simplistic comparisons, or are you worried about where this could lead?
Well, it's the same kind of abusive arguments about international law to invade other countries and violate international law. I mean, if a superpower like the United States sends this powerful signal that powerful states can do what they like in international relations, that certainly loosens the bonds of international law for everybody else. And if you can do it and get away with it, then that becomes the only test of good behavior in international relations. It's exactly why we've got international law. It sets stable and predictable rules that ensure the world is a reasonably safe and peaceful place for all countries, no matter how strong or weak. And that was precisely why the United Nations Charter after 1945 fundamentally transformed the international legal order so that you couldn't do what you could do before 1945, that is, invade other countries when you wanted to, take their resources if you wanted to, enslave their peoples, make them subordinate to your own political interests. And that's the kind of world that Donald Trump and Russia and some other countries are returning us to.
Given this kind of action, does that charter, is it still relevant?
Well, certainly most countries respect the Charter and respect the prohibition on the use of force most of the time. There always has been a problem in international law of powerful states deciding to break the law and having relative impunity when they do that, because nobody's strong enough to stop them. There's not a global police force that can enforce these international rules. But it does make it all the more important that countries like Australia, who say they care about international law and order, to stand up for international law when it is broken, to call out this kind of bad behavior, to condemn even our allies when they're the ones breaking the law, because that helps to enforce the legal system. It helps to set the moral standards of behavior, which everybody should follow. And the more countries that get on board to enforce international law, the greater the price for violations. And we need to make it more costly for countries when they violate international law like this.
Professor Ben Saul is Chalice Chair of International Law at the University of Sydney and the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights. We also heard from Venezuelan journalist and political scientist Tony Frangie-Mawad. I'm Sydney Peed. I'll be back tomorrow with another update on the big stories in the news. And ABC News Daily with Sam Hawley will be back next Wednesday. Thanks for listening.